I just didn't know what was going to happen. And I just thought, like, if I do this, everybody's going to know. Like, everyone's going to know. I don't have it all together.
This is the Made to Advance podcast. I'm your host, Brian Olick. We're here to inspire and equip you for your best future. Well, we've got an incredible guest on the show today. Gladys Cruz is here with us. She is the founder of L'Amazing Events. We're going to get to that name in a second. And she's also, with her husband Roger, leads Engedi Español, which is the Spanish-speaking expression of Engedi Church. She's got two amazing kids, and she is with us here in the studio today. Welcome, Gladys.
Aw, that was such a good intro.
Well, I am so excited to have this conversation. Literally, before there was ever an idea for a podcast, yeah. I remember the first time you started telling me more of your story, and I literally thought, and I think I may have told you this, I thought, there is going to be a day where I'm going to figure out a way to be able to hear, for more people to hear more of your story.
Yes, so you did.
This has been like, I've never forgotten it. And this proves it today.
Yes, so. It does. When I got the text, I was like, yes,
yeah. Brian. He wasn't joking.
He wasn't joking with me.
So, L'Amazing Events.
Yes.
And what's the story? I was like, what's the reference? And then you told me, but you got to tell everybody else because you read L'Amazing Events and you're like, huh?
How did you get that?
Yeah.
When I started the business, I was scrambling, obviously, to get a name. And I was just like, okay, well, I know that I want to create something amazing. And when people look at it, I want them to think, that's so amazing. Mm-hmm. And I also love llamas. I love llamas.
Yeah.
I literally feel always like if I lived in Peru, I would be the happiest person alive.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I came up. It's L'Amazing, it's llama and amazing together. And
how often do you get that question of what's the story with L'Amazing?
Pretty often.
Yeah. It reminds me of when we started Engedi, because everybody is like, what in the world are you calling this church? And you know, people actually thought, is it like a Spanish speaking church?
Yeah.
Because they didn't know what to do with the word Engedi.
Yeah.
So that was a question I fielded a lot. But you know, the good thing is if you've got a clever name or a weird name or an interesting name, people have to ask you about it. And it's a conversation then.
It's always going to be a conversation. Yeah. So they're asking about it.
Well, I'm going to rewind the clock like way back.
Yes.
And you had a very fascinating journey to the United States. And I know this is kind of like going deep straight away, but I would love it if you'd be just willing to share your journey here. And I think it'll be super, super fascinating to those who are listening.
Yeah. So I grew up most of my childhood in Mexico. I was actually there till I was like 8 and a half. And we transitioned, immigrated here to the United States when I turned almost 9. So the story behind that was just, you know, my dad came here and he saw a better opportunity for us as kids. And he was just like, hey, I need to bring you guys over here. So when we came here, it was not an easy journey at all. Like we had, you know, we didn't know the language. We were little. It was such a culture shock for us. And I remember my first day of school. I was just like in the playground crying with my brother outside because I was just thinking like, what are we doing here? Like, I don't know anyone and nobody understands me. And, you know, I just remember it was just a really huge change for us as little kids. My brother at the time was only 4. So he still remembers, but, you know, like, mm-hmm. I feel like he was small. I felt like I was already, like, in my own world with my friends. And when I came here, it was not an easy, not an easy journey.
Yeah. So you're learning everything new. Do you mind? And I don't, you know, you'll have to, I don't know if you feel great about answering this or not, but, like, do you mind backing up the clock and talking about the journey here, actually?
Oh, yeah.
Because that is...
It's a long journey.
That was a long journey, and it's one that most people are not familiar with.
Yeah. So, and I've shared this with you already, but for people that are listening for the first time, my parents here actually were... immigrating illegally. And when I came to United States, it was, you know, I was just told that we were going to go see dad. So to me, it was just like, okay, we're just going to get on a, you know, plane and go see dad. Well, that was not the case at all. I was I remember arriving to Juarez at the time, and I just remember, one, it was just, even that was a culture shock for me because it was so different from where we grew up. And it was just like one of those funny moments where you realize, like, am I still in Mexico or mm-hmm. what is this place? Mm-hmm. When we came, we had to cross the border, and it was all desert at the time. I don't remember exactly where it was, but I know it was like in Arizona somewhere. And I feel like in that moment, like, you don't know what you're doing. My mom was like, you know, it's going to be winter where we're going to be. This is December. And we were like packed with snow pants and snow boots and like a big old jacket. But it's Arizona. It was hot. And so we were just like walking in this desert. It was hot. I remember.
Who's we when you say we?
We is my mom, my brother, and myself. And then we were with a friend and more people that were.
Yeah.
We didn't know who they were. Sure. They were just coming with us. And then
you had a guide of some sort.
It was a coyote that was crossing us. Yeah. We were just like, we didn't know him either. We just kind of, you know, you pay him, you trust him. Mm-hmm. Hopefully he gets us there safe. Mm-hmm. So when we were crossing, I remember one of the biggest things they told us is do not lose your water and don't get left behind. And so we're like, got it. Like, okay. So I remember there was people that you could see that were left behind from other groups that were asking for water, and you could tell they couldn't walk. They were weak. And it was just like really scary. And I wow. remember, you know, I'm 8 and a half. Like, I just remember wanting to help and wanting to give them water. And the guy that was guiding us, he was like, don't talk to them. Don't keep walking. And so my mom was just like, please, like, no, like, let's just keep following. Let's just keep following. And in our group, there were some people that were getting tired. They were running out of water. We were trying to make sure that everybody was sharing and but at the same time, making sure that you're also taken care mm-hmm. of, especially for my mom. She was trying to make sure that we were taken care of as kids. So the first time that we arrived to the United States, I guess you could say, we actually crossed a border. We were left behind because we were told that somebody else was going to pick us up because we were a family. Everybody else was single or a male, and my mom was the only one with children. So we were left behind, and I remember, I mean, it's Arizona. Yes, it's hot, but at night, it was freezing. I remember, like, the ground got really frosty, mm-hmm. and we were so cold, and we were just, like, in the middle of nowhere. We had no idea where we were, and I just remember, like, I was super cold, and my mom was like, we're going to have to start a fire. Like, I'm not going to let you guys just, like, be cold and be left here. I don't know how many days we're going to stay here. So we started a fire. And
you're straight out in the middle of nowhere at this point.
I mean,
point.
I was pretty much still in the desert.
Yeah.
But I had no idea, like, if we were close to civilization sure. at all. Like, I mean, we were just told that we had already crossed and we were already in the States, but that we couldn't move from there because we needed to wait for the second vehicle to pick us up.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't. And they left us behind. And my mom had to start a fire for us to stay warm throughout the night. And because of that, immigration police found us the next day. I remember getting woken up by a giant helicopter above us. Like, it was just like, wow. Oh no, we got caught. Mm-hmm. But we just, you know, we started running. That was the first reaction. We're like, run. Then after that, obviously, more cops came and we just got detained. We got put in jail. I was in jail for 8 and a half. Mm-hmm. And then we got deported back to Mexico a couple of days later. And then we tried again the next mm-hmm. day.
The next day. Oh, my gosh.
Yes, we did.
Yeah.
The next day, we tried again. But the second day was probably the scariest. Man, I told you to talk. I talk a lot, but this is a long story.
Yeah, it's okay.
The second day, we were doing fine. Again, second group, everybody was new. There was a child with us. There was a baby and then us. So there was more females in our group, in the second group. But I don't know, like maybe halfway there, I just remember a bunch of guys stopping us with like huge guns, like, and just telling us to get on the ground and, you know, like separating the males and the females. And we were, the females were all on the ground on their knees, and then the males were getting completely stripped. So what they were doing is that it was part of like probably, I don't know if I could say this, but like probably narcos or something that mm-hmm. were stealing people, you know, their, mm-hmm. all their belongings. I mean, when you come, you're migrating, you come with everything you right. have. And most of the time it's not things, it's money. And so they were just getting stripped and all that money was getting stolen. Mm-hmm. And so the women and children were on the other side. And I remember this lady, she was right next to me. I don't know why I got separated from my mom. My mom was at the end of the line. And this lady, she was just starting to get really paranoid. She had a really nice ring on. And she was like, here, here. Like, they're not going to search you. Like, hold it for me. Hold it for me. And like my mom, she's, you know, trying to be quiet. But at the same time, like, leave my child alone. Right. Don't touch her.
Yeah.
So the guy that's walking around, he notices that I'm trying to hide something. And all I feel is a gun in my head, and my mom just starts crying, and I'm, you know, like, just looking down, like, I don't know what I'm doing, like, should I look up, should I not? And, you know, he asked me, like, ¿Qué tienes en la mano? Like, what do you have in your hand? And I'm like, I just give it to him, I don't care, it's not yeah. mine. I'm like, this is yours, this is not mine. And, you know, he started yelling at me, telling me what was I doing, was I trying to be sneaky? And I was like, it's not mine, like, and so, I think that was probably like one of my scariest moments, yeah. thinking like, are they going to kill me here? Like, I'm only 8. Like, please right. don't kill me. But they were very intimidating, very scary. Once they pretty much stole everything from everyone, they let us go. Mm-hmm. We made it again. They told my mom the same thing. We're going to leave you behind. Somebody's going to pick you up. And she was like, absolutely not. Yeah. We're not making the mistake yeah, again. Right. So we got in the car. We were crammed as can be in this little car. And we were just, you know, we were being told to get off and run and go back in and get off and run and go back in. And we finally make it. And oh, gosh, I need to go back a little bit. Before this happened, we were in Mexico. And so before the second time we came, and I think it was even before the first time, it's foggy.
You were 8.
It's been a really long time.
Yeah.
But we also got kidnapped and sold.
Oh, my goodness.
And then my dad had to pay money to... Oh. For us to,
that. Yeah, right.
For us to be released.
So that's potentially before you even made it the first time.
Yeah, we were still in Mexico at the time.
And you were kidnapped, not through trying to travel to cross.
No.
Just kidnapped for ransom.
We had just arrived, and I remember getting off a bus, and the taxi was the guy that was in charge of us, like, told them our name, mm-hmm. like, last name, and he kind of was like, yeah, that's who I'm looking for. And then my mom was like, but you just told them who we are. And then I remember, like, the guy just kept looking at my brother and I and was like, oh, you guys are so pretty. Mm-hmm. And you guys are like, oh, you guys are so this and so that. And my mom instantly, I mean, she had this mom instinct. She was like, this isn't good. Mm-hmm. Like, we are in trouble. And we were in a house.
That's what I'm remembering from that. Yeah. Yeah, this was not a good house, as I
It was just like, it would just felt so weird. Like, yeah. I asked to go to the restroom, and they were very like, make sure you open this door, don't open that door. And mm-hmm. I was like, but I was a very curious kid. So I was like, I need to go see what they said not to do. Yeah. And I remember opening the door and just seeing belongings, like a lot of belongings, shoes, bags, a lot of things that you were like, this is so weird. Mm-hmm. And I remember the lady just came up and she screamed at me, and instantly, like, their tone and behavior changed completely. We were put to sit down, and then we realized, like, okay, like, they're not here to help us. Mm-hmm. Like, so they asked us for money, and then they told us who was waiting for us in the States. And then they called my dad and said that they were going to give us, you know, pretty much like asking for money to let us go, but they didn't. They sold us to someone else, and that person kept us detained for a week.
Is that right?
And it was like, you know, we were in this dark room, and I remember just like thinking like we didn't have, like they would give us food periodically, but the water was probably the hardest part. And we were just, I just don't remember like thinking like, are we ever going to get out of here? Mm-hmm. Is this going to be okay, mom? Like, are we okay?
Right.
But yeah, that was before all of this happened.
My goodness.
But then, you know, once we made it, we made it.
So and when your dad, I mean, essentially they were holding you guys for ransom more or less. Mm-hmm. So when he pays, and he's in the States.
Yeah, he's here in Michigan actually. Well, he was here in Michigan.
Okay, so he pays. And then, but does that have anything to do with you guys getting here, or is that just for you to be released from captivity from these other people? You know what I'm saying? I mean, is there a connection with getting you into the U.S., or is that just literally like...
Like paying to get released was just to get us released.
Okay.
And then the coyote was like a separate thing. So he had to pay him to cross us two times.
Okay.
Because the first time was a...
Right.
Yeah, was right. A fail. So...
And then you ended up in Chicago? Or you end up, where'd you end up?
I ended up here.
In Michigan.
Holland, Michigan.
How did you meet Roger, your husband?
Oh, Roger. Through church.
Through church. But what church?
Vida Abundante. So he used to congregate at Vida Abundante in Chicago. And they have a sister church here in Holland.
That's right. Now it's come back to me. So was he here and you, or were you there when you guys first met?
So I was here, he was there.
Okay.
And then they had a youth group going on and came out here to help us organize some things because their youth group was a lot bigger than ours. And that's how we met. And we're like, hi.
That's where the magic started. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, that's... And then you began actually then... I don't exactly know how all the order of events plays out, but like your citizenship journey was starting before you were married to Roger. Right?
Yeah. Well,
it obviously
progressed.
Yeah. Once you're married to him.
Yeah. So at the time, I mean, I was illegal since arrival till I was 21.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really hard. I got let go of a lot of jobs, unfortunately. I was, you know, having a really hard time. I wasn't, you know, your regular 6-year-old trying to drive because I couldn't, because I couldn't have a license. Mm-hmm. And so it was just a lot of hard things as a teenager, because even though I obviously went through this journey, I didn't know what we were doing. When I arrived here, I didn't know I was illegal until I literally turned 16. Mm-hmm. I took a driver's ed with my friends because it was fun and cool. And then everybody got their license except this girl.
Oh, is that right?
So that was like... Wait, why can I do it? And
that's the first time you realized it.
First time I realized I was different.
Wow.
I was so sad. I was like, not cool. Yeah. And I remember my friends, you know, at the time, this was a topic that you would never do this. Mm-hmm. You would not speak about it. My parents were very fearful. And so they would just be like, don't tell anyone that we're. So I remember when I found out, my mom was like, you can't tell your friends. Mm-hmm. And so... My friends asked, like, well, why don't you have the license? We got it. Why didn't you? And I made up excuses for 2 years. I was like, oh, you know, she can't do it and she can't go. She works a lot and we don't have money and all the things.
Yeah, right.
Right. So, but once I think it was, I can't remember when Dad got passed, but that was my first step into being legalized here in the States. So I was on DACA for a while, and that just gave me access to working and driving, which was amazing, and going to school if I wanted to. And actually, I did go to school for about a year. And then once I married Roger, then I was able to start my residency, which is residency for 3 years. And then after the 5th year, then you can apply for your citizenship. So
was it a hard process? I mean, once you were... In the residency process, was that like a difficult process, or was it, I mean, or do you go, no, you just kind of go through it and it's
well, with DACA, it gave me like access, but because I came here, my entry was illegal. I actually had to apply for advanced parole. So I had to take the risk of leaving the country, and that gave me a legal entry into the States, but it wasn't a 100% guaranteed that I was going to be able to come back.
Okay.
So when I took that risk of leaving the country and then returning. I got detained, obviously, for a little bit. But in this case, I was, you know, at an airport. Mm-hmm. Everything was pretty nice. And I remember just thinking, like, well, hopefully they let me back in because I have a child coming. I was pregnant with Elena at the time. Okay. And so it is a risk doing advanced parole, but it gives you a legal entry. And by giving you an illegal entry, it eliminates the illegal entry.
Yeah.
Immigration laws are so weird, but
it's tough.
By having that, I was able to say yes. My residency process was very easy. If I didn't do that, though, it would have been very hard. I probably had to have a 10-year bar, which usually you have to leave the country for 10 years before reentering.
Okay, gotcha. So, this is an area, obviously, that a lot of people are, I mean, some are familiar with, a lot of people are not familiar with all the idiosyncrasies of what you've been through. I have a friend right now who, their daughter is in Guatemala and has married a Guatemalan. And so they're like trying to now move to Michigan, actually.
Yeah.
And I think mom and dad are realizing, wow, this whole process is pretty intense. And they just think they had no idea. So it's really been a learning experience. Thank you for sharing all that. I really, really appreciate it. And I think it would be, it's so cool to watch your journey, watch obviously your marriage and you as a mom, you've had a variety of other just different professional roles, but the newest one, starting your own business. All the way at the beginning, when did you start thinking about starting your own business? How did you end up with, and we'll eventually get to what the business is. Yeah. So everybody's just on pins and needles, just waiting right now on the edge of their seat.
What is Lemazing Events?
How did it start?
Oh, well, it started off a very dark place, actually, in my life, which is kind of funny. I was kind of trying new things to get myself out of my funk. I was going through postpartum depression, and I knew that I needed to do something outside my house. At the time, it was COVID. We were all like, you know, just no people, nothing. And I'm a very people person. So they took everything that I felt like I was giving me all the energy. And so I had a really hard time with my second child after. And I remember with my therapy, they were like, you know, you're a very creative person. Like, why don't you do like something that like just a creative outlet? Think of things that are, you know, they are just going to ease you and ground you a little bit. And I started doing makeup first, and then I started doing my hair, like hair updos, and nothing was clicking until I got contacted by a friend that does this in Texas that she used to live here. And she's like, hey, you want to come to the class? And I was like, sure, why not? You know,
the class in Texas?
In Holland. She was going to do a class here in Holland.
Oh, she was going to do a class here.
Yeah, so I was like, yes, I'll take this class. And it's going to be a 2-day class. I was only going to go for a day because I was like, oh, Elena's birthday is the next day. So I'm just going to, you know, check it out. And I knew in that moment, like she was doing something. Like I remember.
Explain the class, what it's all about, what she's,
So she was pretty much teaching us techniques, how to run a business, you know, in a way where like where to buy things, how to start a social media page. But the biggest thing was the technique part. Like, at the time, I was putting balloons on a chicken wire and all my balloons were popping. And I was like, why is this happening to me? And then when I realized how she did it, I was like, this makes so much sense. But I remember her struggling with these balloons. You know, she was tying them. Her hair was all static. And I was like, I love this. Like, why do I want to do that?
You know it's a calling when you can describe that, like, and go, this is what I want to be about. Yeah, that's good.
I want to be that crazy person.
Yeah.
But I was just like, I just fell in love with it. Like, I don't know. I was in such a dark place that I felt like that glimpse of like happiness just changed everything for me. Like, it was just like, wow, like I really want to feel like this every single time. And so that's how it started.
No kidding.
A month later, I took the class in April. Mother's Day was when I launched, and I was like, let's do this.
Wow, that is so, so cool. So you knew you had this passion, and how amazing that it comes from this old friend saying, do you want to take a class?
Yeah.
Then did you create an LLC kind of a like deal, or how did you do the business side of it?
This is funny because, again, there was not a lot of like business tips, I guess, like in that way. Like, I didn't know that you needed an LLC. I didn't know all the things. So at first I was just like, I'm going to do a business account on mm-hmm. Instagram. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much where I started. And then probably in September, so this was in May, September, I got inquired about one of my biggest jobs yet. And I remember thinking, they're going to ask me for things. Like, this looks like a pretty professional yeah. place.
Like, they're going to ask me for this. This is not some 6-year-old's birthday party here. This yes. is like a big deal. Yeah.
And so, and sure enough, they did. And so I was like, oh my gosh. And so I applied for my LLC and I just like got an actual like business account on in the bank. And I was like, wow, this, and I thought about getting a website at the time, but at the moment I just was like, I'm just going to do a CRM for now just to make sure my inquiries are looking a little more professional than just like send me a DM on Instagram.
For those who don't know what a CRM is, explain what a CRM is.
I don't know exactly what it stands for, yeah. but it's pretty much, it's a program where I can receive emails, inquiry forms, my calendar's there. It shows pretty much everything on like my schedule, like mm-hmm. whose job is coming up. When I have calls, when people are paying, and then a lot of cool automation like emails where like okay. if somebody inquires, I right away send an email letting them know I received it mm-hmm. and send them a schedule to schedule a call with me.
That is so cool. So did financially, like as far as getting the thing off the ground, I mean, you've got to get, when she's showing you these supplies, you were doing the chicken wire thing here, and all of a sudden she's got all these. I've seen there's stuff to it here, and yes. special balloons and all this other. Did you have to like put some money out for to make it all happen outside?
I did. Yeah. I mean, I was kind of like, I told Roger after like literally that day, I was like, I'm doing this, mm-hmm. and he was just excited that I was excited about something. Yeah. But then when he realized like how much money I was like, he's like, wait a minute, yeah. what does this mean?
My excitement level just kind of went
dropped.
Down. So like what could you mind sharing? What's started off? How much do you have to put into it?
I probably put about $15,000 to start.
Wow.
Like yeah. the inventory. Yeah, to start off, like right. probably the first 6 months.
Good for you, though. You took the risk and you knew this is what I, yeah. I mean, that's the thing. One of the things I hope when people are listening, it may not be that they're called to start a business, mm-hmm. but they, whatever you're called to, if you're moving, I think if you're moving to your best future, yeah. it's going to involve some risk.
Yeah.
And I just feel like that's a theme that we keep needing to talk about because we're in such a risk-averse society where it's mm-hmm. like trying to play it safe. And for any of us, I mean, we don't like, risk is uncomfortable by definition.
Yeah.
And so it's just good to hear. Here you are married to a pastor, so you guys are not exactly swimming in resources, and you took a risk because yeah. you knew there's something here, and
yeah.
so you've got the resources, you got your supplies, you start advertising on Instagram, and after, like in our show notes, we'll put all of your website stuff and all that yeah. so people can find you and learn more about your business and see your amazing pictures. I love looking at the pictures because just like what you do is is nuts.
Thank you.
When you started like posting stuff on Instagram, stuff like that, how long before jobs started trickling in? Take us a little bit on the journey. Like, was it, oh, I had one job and then it was 5 weeks before I got another one? Or was it like a slow, steady up and to the right thing? Or was it up and down? Or how did the whole thing, how's it work? How long, that was again, when did you start again?
In May, Mother's Day.
Mother's Day of what year?
What was I thinking?
Mother's Day of what year?
Oh my goodness. 2020.
Okay, gotcha. So we've been, this coming May will be 4 years, 3 years. This May will be 3 years. Okay.
Yes.
So that just gives us a sense of how long you've been doing it. But yeah, tell us like kind of that, just what the journey's been just with business.
Yeah, well, right off the bat, I posted this, like, I didn't start with the garlands at first because I was scared, like mm-hmm. you said. This is just like, I was going to be my first time doing something like that. So I was like, I don't know. So what I did was I did these little balloon bouquets. I promoted it on Facebook and Instagram. It was for gifts for Mother's Day. And that went bananas. Like,
no kidding.
Was like, what just happened? Like, I'd sold so many of those things. My house was filled with bouquets.
Yeah.
So that was my start. And I feel like that was just like a confirmation for me to like just continue, which I feel like I can get pretty discouraged pretty easily, especially mm-hmm. if I'm in a season in the season that I was in. So I was just really happy to like feel like that instant high of like, I can do this. But then after that, you know, it started getting a little harder. I started promoting things, but it wasn't, I was just doing things at home. And actually my first opportunity was here at Engedi.
Oh, cool. Yeah. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. It was, I was asked to do something for Fusion Night. I believe it was like a, I think it was a summer party that they were going to do or mm-hmm. something like that. It was the end of school year. And I said, hey, if you guys can just supply the supplies. Is that supply the supplies?
Yeah. They paid for supplies, yes, basically.
And then I'll do the work.
Yeah.
And it was probably one of my biggest installations.
Was that an indoor or an outdoor?
It was the outdoor one. It was like a tropical theme one.
Oh, I totally remember that. I was like, what?
What is that?
It's crazy. It's amazing. Yeah. And then they were like, yeah, Gladys did that. I thought, hold on. It's like a balloon superpower she's got. Yeah.
So I remember my mentor, which is Nancy. She's the one that taught me all these things. She was like, you are so amazing. I'm so excited. You're going to take off. And she was just like, you know, pumping me up. Yeah. And I remember, you know, the reels were very new at the time. So I was starting to do reels. And I don't know if they were new. I just was getting them. Now that I think about it, I'm like, I just sounded probably really old. Anyway, but I was like, yeah, I was going to start doing some reels. And my sister was helping me. And my brother was here too. And I remember that installation took me like 3 days.
No kidding.
Which is so funny to think about now because I can whip that up probably like in less than 3 hours. But anyway, it was just hilarious. Kidding. Like I was like, why did it take me so long?
Oh, that's a great side point though on the whole just growth curve with stuff. You know, when I think the same thing when it comes to a variety of things I do, including what it takes to get messages ready and whatnot.
Yeah.
You've just got to put the time in on the front end. Okay. And that's such an important thing. And it's maybe you didn't feel frustrated by the time. I don't know. I mean, at the time when I first started writing just messages, teaching, mm-hmm. et cetera, I just was like, there's so many hours to have a good message. And I couldn't compromise. If I tried to cut it short.
Yeah.
I mean, it was pretty clear to me everybody and probably to everybody else. Yeah. Those are the days when I'd sometimes get done preaching and say to my wife, that was terrible. I want to quit. And she would be like, don't quit. Not yet, at least. So anyway, but that's such a cool thing. You know, I mean, you're investing that kind of time. That's a major installation. Mm-hmm. And I'm guessing you're going to say too, because you're like starting to be able to then tell your story with like, this is what I can do.
Yeah.
But what a crazy thing to think that what took you 3 days is now, you said you could do in 3 hours.
Probably.
That is crazy. That's cool. So, you started, I'm guessing, so that was your first big one. Then take us.
Yeah.
That
was such a great opportunity to do. One, because it was, you know, it's in a really, really busy street. A lot of people were stopping in to just check it out. Actually, at that night, I believe there was a young guy that came in and gave his life to Christ that day, which is really rewarding for me because I'm like, all right, like sometimes, you know, as a pastor wife, I feel like I'm like, I'm going bananas here. Like, what am I doing with my life? Like, yeah. I'm over here parties and promoting all the things. And so it was just like really nice to know that I could still like, there could still be so much blessing behind all of this. Mm-hmm. And I know it was blessing my life, but it was just cool to see that just that little thing bless someone else totally. In some way. But anyway, that opened the doors for the type of clientele that I wanted, but I didn't know if I was going to be able to get. Mm-hmm. And it just opened the doors to so many opportunities.
Because they saw it here or because they saw it then on like Instagram and they were like, oh my gosh,
look at Instagram.
That. Okay.
Yeah. It was just a pretty cool. Like people were like, I've never seen this before. I mean, this area within itself, like you have your balloon artist, but I just think that like there was still up and coming. Like, and till this day, I feel like there's still a lot of people that are doing it, but not necessarily as much as like you think of big cities mm-hmm. like LA and Texas. And so, yeah, I was fairly new to the game, but I felt like I definitely put a statement out there. I was like, hey, I'm here.
Right. No, totally.
And it just took off like slowly, mm-hmm. but it took off when I got my first big client in September. At first I thought it was a scam.
Oh, is that right? That's funny. Why did you think it was a scam?
Because they emailed me and I was like, how did they get my email? And then like, they were just like, it was just like very professional. Mm-hmm. And I was like, it was just weird. And I'm like, and I searched, I remember searching the actual like place and I like showed Roger. I was like, oh my gosh, this place is beautiful. Like,
oh, no
he's
kidding.
Like, he's like, well, it's not a scam. I'm like, what if it is? And he's like, I literally was so skeptical about it. I don't know why. Cause it was just like what they were asking for was so much. And I was like, this is bananas. Like, mm-hmm.
Was it bigger than the Engedi installation?
It wasn't necessarily size-wise, okay. but like budget-wise, yes. Yeah, okay. And so it was just like...
How can it not be? Since you were helping us out so much, but anyway.
No, but like...
Yeah, so yeah. This is a big project.
It was a fun, big project, and I was really excited. And actually, they've been one of my best clients.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, is that so cool? So basically, it's just been slow and steady growth since
slow
then, more or less.
Slow and steady, yeah. And I, you know, I'm excited to, like, every time I post something on Instagram, I always get at least one client, and it's just really cool to, like, just see, like, wow, like, this is... It's taken off. Yeah. Like, it took off very, very quickly. Last year was probably like my shocker because it went from starting a business in May, ending in December. And it was like, oh, you know, made some money, but it was like, hey, it's okay. And then it went from that to tripling my sales. And this year I'm hoping to increase it by like 15%, which I think I'll get there.
That's cool. Yeah. And you've got some people now that help you out at different times. And you've got, I know Roger and I talk about this more than you and I talk about it, but just helping navigate when you've got, say, it might be two jobs at the same on the same weekend or something you can't do. So you've developed a team a little bit. And I know that's something you're pressing into.
I'm trying. So Sundays was one of my biggest hits last year where I wasn't taking any Sunday jobs. Mm-hmm. And I realized how much money I lost by doing that. And so, but I also didn't want to compromise like Roger, me, church. And so I was just like, I can't do both. And so I asked Roger, I was like, what do you think about potentially hiring somebody on just for Sundays? And he said, if somebody wants to, yeah, go for it. And I had contacted a couple people. Some people said yes, some people said no. But then I felt like that person was the perfect fit at that moment. And I was like, and I ran with it this year. Awesome. And it's really cool just to like be like, There's something happening Sundays, but
right on, yeah, that's cool. If you had to say, when you look back on your journey thus far as an entrepreneur, what would you say that these one or two things are the biggest challenges to do what I'm doing?
Oof, man. Obviously, I think I started the business not knowing a lot of business wise. Mm-hmm. Like I could do the creative part of it, and that's fun. But the business part, I think it's probably what has been a learning curve for me, just figuring out all the things that I just didn't realize, like, oh, that's probably important. I should include that. Like an LLC, I included a few months after, and a website, I'd included it last year. And I did things a little bit backwards, but I felt like now I'm like, okay, like I'm on track. But it still, there's days where I'm like, I have no idea what I'm doing.
I think that's what, you know, they call it imposter syndrome. And that's a true thing, a real thing, right?
That's a totally
and
real thing.
I was listening to somebody, and I might have been on a podcast, and they were saying that this person was saying who runs with some big time kind of people.
Yeah.
And he was saying even at the most accomplished level, people deal with imposter syndrome in huge ways.
Yeah.
So just a fascinating thing, just that psychological feeling of, I don't know what I'm doing, who am I to do this? And whether it's a small business or you're in a high profile role that people wrestle with that. Mm-hmm. Have you, when it comes to figuring out the little different business elements that you've had to figure out along the way, has it been like primarily your mentor in Texas that's helped, or have you turned to other people? Like how do you end up discovering, oh, I need to do this or that, and here's how, and things like that?
I love learning. That is just something I appreciate about like my mom and my dad, like just like constantly always pushing us to learn new things. And so I just feel like I had a hard time before asking for help, but I think this business has taught me to let that go and ask for help. Because I was like the type of person, I'm like, I got it. You know, it's just me. I got it. And I realized quickly that like, no, you need people to help you. So yes, Nancy, she's been a huge help. You know, when I have tough questions, like she's the person I'll go to because she's done her business for a lot longer, and actually her business has increased tremendously since. And then I have a small community here of what I call my mitten balloon artists with mitten by Michigan mitten. But anyway, balloon artists that I, you know, if I ever have a question, I always go to them. And then just research.
Yeah, that's good.
Research.
Well, it's a funny thing with starting your own business, because on the one hand, you need this side of you that has to be, I've got this, I can do this. You have to be, I don't want to say a lone wolf, but you have to have a little bit of the, I'm not leaning, I'm not leaning into other people to make this happen for mm-hmm. me. If it's going to happen, it's going to happen because I owned it. I'm doing the work. I'm doing the 3-hour installation.
Yeah,
that's just what it's going to take. But on the flip side, you can't live in that place. You have to lean into others if you're going to. Yeah. And I mean, you can try to do it all on your own. But even then, like what I've found is the more I've learned into people who leaned into people who are ahead of me.
Yeah.
They just help you move further faster. Mm. And sometimes I've had conversations with people who they'll say, oh yeah, we did it this way. And I've thought, why did I not ask this question 5 years ago? Yeah. How much time would have been saved? How much further would we have been? Yeah. I don't know for me if it was like, I just didn't even think of asking. I just thought I'm just doing mm-hmm. my thing. And so I really applaud you for continuing to take that step, because I think that there are so many people that like helping other people.
Yeah.
And when you have hard won lessons, like if somebody comes to you right now and was to say, hey, Gladys, I'm thinking about starting a business. Mm-hmm. And I think knowing not just your heart, but your journey with your business, you would be like, let's grab coffee. I'll mm-hmm. walk you through all the stuff. You can do this so much better than me because I was doing it backwards. And now I would have done this first and all that. And you'd like share all that in a heartbeat.
100%.
Yeah. And so I think that, and I think there are people ahead of you that would feel the same about where you're at. And so I think that's a cool opportunity we all have when we've gotten some traction underneath us with 100. Our business or our marriage or whatever. So you've dealt with some, and you kind of referenced this already, some just mental health challenges, and that's been a journey for you. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about what those have been like, and then how you've, I don't want to even say gotten on the other side. I don't know if that's a good way to put it, how you've navigated. Just mental health challenges.
So in that season, it was like that postpartum depression was kind of like totally weird because I didn't really realize I was in it until mm-hmm. like I was in it and I was like, oh, this is really bad. I experienced it a little bit with Elena, but it wasn't anything alerting. I felt like it went away probably a couple months after she was born. And so didn't really feel it, but with Nolan, it really lingered and sticked around for a while. And I think that was the reason why I was like, what is happening with me? Because it was a year later where I really started to feel like a lot of the symptoms, like, and, you know.
A year after Nolan's birth, that's mm-hmm. wow, that's a long time to have passed. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was just, and I didn't realize this, but it could last up to 2 to 3 years after birth. So I was like, what is wrong with us?
Yeah, right.
But it was just like, wow, like I always heard of the blues, you know, after you mm-hmm. 1 week, 2 weeks, like I thought that was, you know, the norm and for everybody. And I didn't realize there was such a thing as postpartum depression, after the 2 weeks. And so, yeah, I struggled. I feel like I've always struggled a little bit with like depression, and I can't really find the root of it, honestly. But at 11, I remember my first thought of like wanting to hurt myself. It was more like harm than anything else. But I just, you know, my family was completely a mess. There was domestic abuse, and we moved from a completely different country. I was learning the language. I was having a hard time making friends. And so I just felt like my life at 11 was falling apart. Mm-hmm. So I remember that was like the first feeling. I felt like a true sadness, but it wasn't ever like something that I was like, oh, it's constant or it's lingering around for years. Mm-hmm. It was just a couple months and then it would go away. But then one of my biggest serious was my postpartum, where I really felt like, wow, I haven't had this feeling in a really long time. And it was just a really dark place. And I was in a really dark place to the point where Roger was, you know, he didn't know how to help me. And I don't blame him. Like, it's just something that it's out of someone's control to do and to help. And so he did. He advised me. He's like, I think you need professional help. Like, I don't want to say you're not, like, I'm not going to help. He's like, I just don't know what to do anymore. And at first it hurt me because I felt like he wanted nothing to do with how I felt, but I felt like he was just so overwhelmed with how I was feeling that he just couldn't offer anything to me that like made me feel better. And I think that when we got to a place where I hurt myself, that I, you know, never thought I would get there. Mm. Like, I was really, I've always, like, I always give the, and this might be a little too much, but I always give this analogy of, like, when you're in a really dark place, and this was always me, like, I was, would always go with the pills, you know. I'd grab the pills and just play around with them in my hand, and there was always this thought of, like, if I was not here, mm-hmm. things would be better. And it was just that power moment, I guess, for me in a way, like where I felt like if I wasn't here, if I just took this and was gone, it would be better. Better for my kids, better for my husband, better for everybody else. And it's in a way, selfishly better for me. But never did I ever take the action of doing it. I just, you know, thought about it or looked at it.
Did you tell Roger you were having that level of thoughts? No.
No. No, I didn't. It was just more of like my emotions that mm-hmm. he just knew of, but never really knew the darkness that really was happening. And that was part of the problem, honestly. Just was so afraid to communicate these mm-hmm. things and let people in this way. And people know that, like, hey, I'm actually thinking of not wanting to be in this world. Like, what do you think about that? You know? Mm-hmm. So when I did this, I remember that night. It was the day before, the day of, it was a really scary moment because I had my first huge panic attack. And I remember I was by myself with the kids, and I just could not handle anything that was going around. I just felt like everything seemed so overwhelming. And I was scared for myself. I was scared for them. And I just remember closing the door in the bathroom, crying and screaming like crazy. My kids are scared. I'm scared for them. And I just remember calling Roger, and I was like, you need to come home right now. Like, I'm not doing well. And I think that's the moment he realized, like, mm-hmm. okay, what's going on? Again, not really being honest about how I was feeling. We got into an argument because he was just kind of like, what are you doing? You know, what is this? Like, what's going on? And that made me feel a lot worse. And so that night, I remember going upstairs, and I took action on something I thought I would never do. Mm. And I instantly regretted it, but I felt like I was too late, but at the same time, it wasn't. So I made myself puke because I was like, what did I just do? Mm-hmm. But I don't know what happened because I knocked out. And I remember in the morning, or I don't know what time it was, it was probably like 7 a.m., like I wake up. You know, there's puke next to me. I feel like I got hit by a train, and I'm like, what just happened? Like, what did I do? I started crying because I realized, like, if I didn't wake up, like, my kids were going to see me first. Like, it wasn't going to be anybody else, and that hurts me.
Yeah.
So I thought, like, wow, what did I just do? Like, why did I do that? And I remember, I was pregnant at the time, and I went to my doctor's appointment because at first I just wanted to make sure I was doing okay, and I wanted to make sure the baby was okay because I was like, what did I just do? Like, what did I do? And I heard the heartbeat, and I was like, okay, everything's fine. I'm okay. The baby's okay. And I called the hospital, leaving that place, and I remember I was just driving, and I call it passively suicidal. Like, I was like, I just want to hit this post. Like, I was just constantly thinking mm-hmm. about not wanting to be here, and I was battling with that. Like, I was just like, what? Like, I was mad at myself for doing that, but at the same time, I was still thinking about this. Like, it was just like this demon, like, constantly, like, no, but you want to hit that post. You want to hit that car. You want to, you know, get off the road. And wow. And so I just thought, like, I need help. Like, I finally, like, realized, like, I need to tell someone. And I called the hospital, and the lady was, like, super sweet. She was just like, hi, honey. And, you know, like, had no idea what I was calling about. And then I started telling her, and I remember her, like, I can't forget her voice. It's still, like, it was so calming. Mm.
Sorry. And you probably have never met her. So here she is serving, answering a phone. That's probably what she does for her job, is primarily, like, she's on the phone and has no idea what a big impact she made in your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I didn't think I was going to cry. Right. Yeah, but she did. She made a huge impact in my life. And I was like, wow, like she got me there safe. And she just said it's going to be okay. Mm-hmm. And
she told you to drive in then?
She told me to drive in. Yeah. And then she told me to go in. But she's like, I'm going to stay with you until you're checked in. And so I couldn't talk. Like I was gone. Like I don't know what was wrong with me, but at the time, like I just couldn't, like I just like remember looking at the lady at the front desk and she's just like, how can I help you? And I was just like, and I remember telling the lady, I can't do this. I can't do this. And I think my biggest fear was like, are they going to take my kids away? Mm. Am I going to get admitted and not see them? Like, I just didn't know what was going to happen. And I just thought like, if I do this, everybody's going to know, like everyone's going to know I don't have it all together and I'm struggling and I almost hurt myself and I was so afraid of everything. And she's like, pass me the phone. She's like, give her the phone. I'll talk to her. I'll give her your information. And she did. And I was like, you know, right away they got me in and they took everything away from me, like my phone and my purse. And I felt weird because like there was always someone right next to me, like a nurse. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I need to call my husband. Like I felt like I was in jail. I was like, I need to call my husband. And he's there like, yeah, you'll get a chance. Just give us a second. And I got freaked out when a social worker came in because I was like, social workers, that's not a good sign.
Right, totally.
I was just like freaking out, like, please don't take my... Like, I was just so scared that this act was going to be... Something was going to happen with my mm-hmm. kids. Like, I was being a bad mom or irresponsible. And I don't know, I was so afraid. And she was like, that's not going to happen. Like, I'm just here to evaluate you. I'm just here to make sure that you're okay. And so... Yeah, that was a really, really tough season. And after that, I was admitted for about a week. And I was released, you know, strict, make sure you're therapy every, you know, every week. And I refused medication because I was pregnant. And so I just didn't want to take anything. And then 2 weeks later, I lost my baby. So that was not easy. Like, it was just like a really hard season. And it's hard not to blame myself, but,
sure.
You know, I know they tell me all the time, like, no, it's not your fault. Like, that's not, it was just such a natural thing. Like, something was wrong with your heart. But I think of a month worth of events and I'm like, man, like, I was just not doing well. Like, my body was not okay. And mm-hmm.
So hard, too, to think about your finally admitting to yourself and to others that you're in a really dark place. Mm-hmm. And then to have the additional news of losing the pregnancy is just like,
it was not easy. Yeah. Everybody was pretty worried. My mom was super scared and, you know, and I don't know if it's like this for a lot of people, but for Latinos, depression doesn't exist. Anxiety doesn't exist. And so, it was hard to know that my parents knew this about me. And like even after I was let go, like they were like, but why? Like, you're so good. You know, your life is good. Your husband is good. Like, they were just, they couldn't understand. And I get it because they grew up in a pretty terrible homes and just scary to even think about the things that they went through. And, you know, it's this constant battle of like, I'm blessed, but it's not that. Like, I think there's this misconception of like people's lives. Like, you think of, you know, like, yes, I am blessed. And I always say like, I feel blessed, but I couldn't describe it better, but it's just a mental battle. Like, mm-hmm. I'm constantly in a battle with my mind. And I think that it's not something to just be like, oh, I'm just going to discard it. And, you know, like I hope that it would be that easy, but it's not. And so
you've developed obviously a lot of strategies for being able to just, I mean, both initially and then probably in some ways ongoing, just kind of navigating that your thought life and mm-hmm. emotional life, what are some of the things that you've done to try to keep yourself in a good place, to recognize when you feel like my mind is going places that I know are not helpful? What have you done?
Yeah, I mean, obviously this was back in 2021. 2021 was pretty learning curve for a lot of things for me. Obviously the business helped a lot. Mm-hmm. It just helped me get out of that funk a little bit. And then periodically, like, I think that there's still moments of anxiety that happen that I feel them, and until this day. But most of the time I like to quiet. That's usually my go-to. Like, if I'm feeling very anxious, like if I'm around a group of people or even with my own kids, like I just like put myself in a room. I put some headphones on that like kind of cancel with no music on, just like to cancel mm-hmm. the noise. And I just sit in the quiet. Like I tend to like, in the quiet, I feel like that's where my mind is the most like calm. Mm-hmm. I feel like sometimes like if there's too much going on, like I just feel like my mind takes it and it like stays there. Like the noise stays there, the conversations stay there. Obviously, like I said, my business really has helped. I just feel like usually like if I'm doing something, like I put music on and I feel like I'm concentrating on something. I've pray a lot. Mm-hmm. This has been a constant prayer, and I continue to believe that God will take this away from me completely. I've seen the fruits of a lot of things. Like, I haven't taken medications since I was released, and I feel like the battle has been, it's been tough, but I'm not, like, I know and I trust God that I will be healed. Like, mm-hmm. there is one thing that I constantly tell him, like, I know you'll heal me. So most of the time, some of those like anxiety thoughts happen at night, and typically like I just like end with a prayer at night, and I'm just like, I'm gonna clear my mind. I'm gonna completely clear my mind. I want you to take all these things away, and I just want to just relax. Mm-hmm. And it really helps. Wow. And you know, I just feel like, I don't know, I've those three things, and I probably think more, like I got advice to do, you know, to work out and to do like things that like are just going to release a lot more. But timing.
Yeah.
I'm busy.
You're still a business owner, a leader of Vanguardia Espanol, a leader of your own business, and an incredible wife. So you got
a couple hats.
I just want to say thank you for sharing with all of that journey. I know it's vulnerable. In our culture. Well, no, that's part of why I was hoping you, and we checked in ahead of time on this subject, because I don't want to ask questions about something that you don't feel comfortable sharing mm-hmm. about. But what you said with regard to being able to name where you were struggling mm-hmm. and bring something that was in the dark to light, invite people around you to mm-hmm. support you, even culturally where, and it's obviously it's not just limited to Latino culture. I mean, where people don't want to acknowledge this is a real thing.
Yeah.
So I just think it's really, really important. And I think it's just such a gift for you to be so courageous as to name this was my journey.
Yeah.
But also to see your example of there's hope. I mean,
there is.
You've taken the steps, and it's not like you've done the work. It's not like you just woke up one day or you were in the hospital for a week and the next day you're like, I'm good to go and all that. You've had to be diligent and intentional. It's just really, really cool. So thanks for sharing all of that.
Yes, of course.
Here's my last question. You've got so much going on and made an impact in our city in just a million different ways. When you think future-wise of just stuff you dream about, or you go, I hope this happens, or I'm looking forward to that. And it could be anything. I was thinking especially about your business, mm-hmm. but it doesn't have to be that. Yeah. Is there anything that you're like, I hope we can do this, accomplish that, whatever?
Oh man, there's so many hopes and dreams for the future. But I don't know. Like I think I would do something more for my business. I feel like that's kind of what I'm poured into right now. I want to, you know, hopefully be the biggest in Michigan. That would be nice.
That's awesome.
But I want to start I want to have at least one or two employees that could help me and just kind of start delegating some things. Mm-hmm. I want to have a warehouse, and I want to be more than just balloons. I want to be a rental company. So,
For like events and parties, things like
parties.
That.
Yeah. So I know that's very, I think that's a lot, but I feel like I just see it growing and I don't see it slowing down. And I just think like, why not? You know, yeah, this has been fun. It's a fun journey and I want to continue to grow, continue to learn. And yeah,
I love that. I love that you've got thoughts that you're not just kind of, in a sense, waiting for it to come to you. And there is a part of where it's right for folks to wait in a sense where you're not trying to force everything, but mm-hmm. you also need to have a picture of your vision, a picture of this is where I hope it could go. And, yeah. and you can align your life and your time and your energy and your resources towards what that would look like. So I think it's fantastic to hear your journey and know that you still are aspiring for greater things.
Yes.
And your story, Gladys, is so, so cool. And just thank you for being willing to share it with us. And I know everybody who hears this is going to be so encouraged and challenged. I feel challenged just sitting here with you. So
yeah. Well, thank you. And honestly, I know a lot of this stuff is pretty heavy, but I just really hope I wanted to open my heart to people because I do feel like it's sometimes we keep things in the dark. And like you said, bringing them to light really changes things. And I believe that when you have a thrive, like people around you that help you, that know what's going on, they can really, really help. And that has made a huge difference. So if anybody out there is struggling, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid to just put yourself out there, ask for help, and you'll see a huge difference on how you can handle things. So yeah, thank you.
That's a great word to end on. Thanks for being on our podcast and look forward to continuing to see your business flourish
you so
and your family flourish as well. Thanks for being on.
Yeah.
I hope you were as encouraged as I am by our conversation with Gladys today. I love her sense of entrepreneurial risk-taking spirit. She is just pressing in and she's not worried about making mistakes and doing it just right. She's just doing what she knows how to do and learning as she goes. What a great example. And I'm so thankful she was willing to be as honest and as vulnerable she was about her mental health journey. And I just hope that if you're listening right now and perhaps you're dealing with some mental health challenges and maybe nobody knows about them, I would just encourage you, reach out to somebody, a trusted friend, a mental health professional, and invite them into your journey just as Gladys has done. We hope so much that these conversations are an encouragement in your journey. And if this conversation has been, please rate us, review us, make a comment, share this episode with some friends and let them know that you were encouraged and built into by our podcast. That would be a huge benefit to us. This has been a production of Engedi Church, and we continue to just dream up new ways of bringing you great content that can be a blessing and benefit to your life. Until our next episode, just know you were made to advance.